blah, blah, blah. Wait. Okay, that's usually the sound I hear when folks who have so much to be thankful for go into extended complaining mode. At first, I do hear what the person or group is saying, and I try to respond in a gracious and appropriate way. But when the complaining becomes extended, or I think the complaining is unjustified, I struggle to remain gracious and kind in my responses. I have the attitude that extended complaining only serves to irritate others. I wonder if Moses felt that way when the Israelites, recently delivered from slavery in Egypt, went into extended complaining mode. Of course, food was necessary for the congregation, but couldn't they have whined less? Today's reading, it's from Exodus 16, 2-15. It doesn't paint a rosy picture of the Israelites as they travel toward the Promised Land. Even the question that becomes the name of the flaky substance the Israelites collected each morning has a sound of complaint to it. What is it? Or manna? It reminds me of a picky child looking at some goo on a plate and saying, "What is this?" while giving a look that says, "Yuck." Moses' response to the question I experience as more complaining is one that sounds like a parent's response to the picky child. "Eat it. Eat it. It's good for you." Keith Green, he's a singer who was killed in a plane crash more than 25 years ago. He had some fun with this passage in a song called "So You Want to Go Back to Egypt." The song helps to get a little bit of the mood of the times as the Israelites wandered in the desert on their way to the Promised Land. Here's your a cappella moment from the song. "So you want to go back to Egypt, where it's warm and secure? Are you sorry you bought the one-way ticket when you thought you were sure? You wanted to live in the land of promise, now it's getting so hard. Are you sorry you're out here in the desert instead of your own backyard? Eating leeks and onions by the Nile. Ooh, what breath, but dining out in style. Ooh, my life's on the skids. Give me the pyramids. Well, there's nothing to do but travel, and we sure travel a lot. 'Cause it's hard to keep your feet from moving when the sand gets so hot. And in the morning it's manna hotcakes. We snack on manna all day. And they sure had a winner last night for dinner, flaming manna souffle." I probably changed key in there somewhere. Anyway, I don't think that there was actually flaming manna souffle. But the Israelites ate a lot of manna. So let's look deeper. Manna, what is it? Yep, just like I said before, manna means what is it? But what is it? Manna. It's manna, what is it? Who's on first? I don't know. Third base. Well, what? No, he's on second. Who? Manna. What is it really? Bread from heaven? That was the thought of the singing group my father was in back in the 1970s. They were called Manna. And they found out that their name meant something different than bread from heaven. When they found out that they meant what is it, they still kept the name. They even had some fun with it at concerts. They would talk at the concert, go, "We thought our name was something like bread from heaven, but we later found out that it means what is it? We hope you're not confused tonight." People would laugh, yes. So what is manna, really? Well, it's a flaky substance that was left over when the dew lifted in the morning. What was it made of? Well, to understand that, we have to go back to Moses. Do you remember that Moses' name can be understood in two different ways? Remember me talking about that? Moshe, meaning drawn out, as in I drew him out of the water. And then there's Moses, meaning son of. It's similar to Ramses, which means son of Ra. Moses would be son of, and there's no Ra at the beginning or any of the other gods. So in a similar way, we decipher language, manna, which is an Aramaic word, which means, what is it? Manhu, the Hebrew word that corresponds with manna, also means, what is it? But in Arabic, kind of like the Moses thing, manhu means, this is plant lice. The singing group name gets worse and worse. manna, manhu, was likely the dried up secretions of scale insects, wax covered bugs that infest the tamarisk trees in the area the Israelites wandered. The insects look like plant growths. So, bug goo. Now I'm thinking of that picky child looking at some goo on a plate and saying, "What is this?" while giving a look back that says, "Yuck, eat it, it's bug goo." What is it? Manna. Wait, I'm confused. Here's the real point though. God provided nourishment. No matter what exactly it was, it kept the people sustained on their long journey in the desert. God responded to the complaints of starvation with exactly what the people needed. The people were grumbling, arguing, even saying they had been better off enslaved. They wanted things better on their terms. Do you also remember this is a translation of God's name? Yahweh, I am what I am, but also I will be what the future requires. Just as accurate as I am what now requires. What is it? Manna? Today? Do we trust in God's providence because our needs are met? Because we have full refrigerators and cupboards, do we trust God more? Or do we fill our fridges and cupboards because we trust God less? Do we hold on to our stuff because we think God can't provide? Do we ever hold back from giving because we don't think that there's enough? And what about trusting God as it relates to the coronavirus pandemic? Let me go out on a limb. If you're not wearing a mask, wanting to be in large groups, refusing to keep 6 feet of distance, and even declaring that it's okay to back to meeting in church the exact same way that we did before, because God will protect you, well, you're not paying attention to the resources that you have at your disposal. Medical experts who continue to say that coronavirus can be deadly, can lead to lifelong health problems in all populations, and that meeting in large groups for extended periods of time raise the risk factor for getting coronavirus. How about we trust that God has given us the ability to learn from our past mistakes and not repeat them? How about we trust that God has given us the ability to learn from what we knew even 6 or 7 months ago and to do something different? God is doing something new. Let's follow what God is doing. God provides enough so that we can be, in all circumstances, a caring community of Christ. See, yes, there is enough. God does provide. Sometimes we have hardships, of course. And then we can see as we get past those hardships that God provides. It's not always easy to see or do, and in the middle of it, maybe you can't even see it. But trusting in God's providence is part of what we do as followers of God. And we need to reach out to folks who really don't have enough so that all may have enough. When the Israelites had made it through the desert and had entered into the promised land and had lived there a long time, they still remembered. Listen to these words from Deuteronomy 24. When you reap your harvest in your field and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back and get it. It shall be left for the alien, the orphan, and the widow. When you beat your olive trees, do not strip what is left. It shall be for the alien, the orphan, and the widow. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, do not glean what is left. It shall be left for the alien, the orphan, and the widow. Remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Maybe today God is tugging at your heart. God can provide what you need. Maybe today God is tugging at your heart. Let go of the harmful and hoarded stuff and know that God will provide even as you let go. Maybe today God is tugging at your heart. Give time. give money, give self, and trust that God provides enough. I don't know exactly how God is tugging at your heart today, at any one of our hearts today. But we're being called to respond. There's something God is calling you to do. What is it? Amen.